Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think of your goals. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you absolutely should get Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I absolutely love Babbel because their courses help me learn real-life conversational skills. It's so easy to learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to the locals without having to consult language apps. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time offer for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/SPP. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/SPP. That's spelled BABBEL.com/SPP. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The podcast where we talk to smart people, but not necessarily done by smart people.
That is an awesome question.
This one goes down probably on one of my top five.
Hey, I like nutrition. I like to eat food. This is the coolest thing ever. We're going to do this forever.
I wish I paid more attention in that class.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I don't understand that. As a man, I don't get it.
Welcome to SmartPeoplePodcast.com.
Hello and welcome to Smart People Podcast, conversations that satisfy your curious mind. Thanks so much for listening. And it is time. It's time to announce the winners of our giveaway. I'm sure you've heard this, you read the email, but I have a new podcast. It's called The Week on Earth. In fact, we just wrapped up season one, 10 episodes, ranging from a story about how toilet paper is killing one of our most precious resources in the boreal forest, to a new way to recycle, how we fix the ozone layer, and much more. Go check us out. Follow, subscribe. It's called The Week on Earth. But for those that entered the giveaway and subscribed and let us know, we appreciate it. And I will now announce the winners, and I will also follow up with you all via email. All right, our first winner is Karen Nichols. Karen, congratulations. Our second winner is Holly Clary. Holly, also congratulations. And our third and final winner is Olivia Hubbard. So I will be emailing all of you and we will get your address so we can send you what you won, which was either a Fitbit or a Kindle based on how the drawings went. Congratulations. And by the way, just because the giveaway is over doesn't mean you can't still listen and enjoy. It is a phenomenal podcast called The Week on Earth. All right, back to Smart People Podcast. Speaking of phenomenal, so excited to bring you this week's episode on a brand new topic and one that is very timely for me as I just spent Sunday watching football. And this week on the show, you also get two for the price of one because we are talking to Ben Valenta and David Sickerjack about their brand new book called Fans Have More Friends. And yeah, it's probably what you think it is. It's a book about the camaraderie of fandom, but it's a Smart People Podcast book because it talks about how sports fans exhibit stronger measures of well-being, happiness, confidence, optimism. It talks about how we can leverage the global nature of sports to have more in common with each other, to start conversations, to bridge gaps. It's a wider ranging discussion than just, hey, you should enjoy sports. And that's what I want to do here. Always learn something new. Ben Valenta is the SVP of Strategy and Analytics for Fox Sports. David Sickerjack founded Dexterity Consulting, a strategy and analytics consultancy that artfully blends research, analysis, and empathy to transform how brands think. Make sure you have that follow, subscribe button on Smart People Podcast. We've got a lot of excellent episodes and new guests that you will enjoy coming up, and I don't want you to miss them, so be sure to follow. Let's get into it as we talk with Ben Valenta and David Sickerjack about their brand new book, Fans have more friends. Enjoy. So I was just professing my sports obsession with you, and one of the hardest things is trying to convince my wife that the couple hours I might spend on a weekend watching golf or the too many hours I spend on Sunday watching football, trying to convince her it's a worthy task. And Ben, you actually started alluding to the fact that there is some science behind that. And I know that's what the entire book's about, but give us a little teaser about the impact and the benefit of being a fan.
Yeah. So what we were talking about is just as we started to work on these ideas and we started to lay them down into a book, and we're going to kind of give you the ammunition. The next however long we speak will be all about the ammunition. Our mission here is to help fans realize that their fandom is powerful, that they should embrace it, that they should lean into it because it benefits them. I mean, our line that we use, and we use it in the book, is, you know, your fandom is good. It's good for you. It's good for others. It's good for society. And so as we were starting out having some of these conversations, and we're having casual informal conversations just with friends, you know, in the backyard with neighbors, in the front yard, tossing the ball with the kids and chatting with people. And we would explain some of these ideas, kind of get into it. And sometimes we're kind of workshopping some of the ideas. Sometimes we're just sort of talking about what's going on at work. And people would stop us down and say, "Hey, wait, I need to bring my wife over. I need you to do this bit again for my wife or my girlfriend, because I try to tell her that it's important that I go do this. And she tries to push it off as something that's kind of trivial, fatuous. And what we're here to do is talk about why your fandom is important. Right. And why you should lean into it. And I think what the findings we'll get into, some of the science we'll get into, what the data says is that your life's going to be better off if you lean into your fandom.
Before we get into what you both do, because we need a little bit of an intro. Have you ever had somebody say, "Listen, I think you both are tied to the sports industry. It's in some way. Doesn't it make sense for people in the sports industry to tell other people that they should be fans? Like, doesn't that come across as a convenient marketing line?"
We've certainly heard that, and we've had that conversation. And the fact of the matter is, you know, and this maybe is a segue into the background a little bit. What we do, our day jobs, as it were, is to understand fans, right? And this really started as a professional obligation. The more we dug into it, the more the data revealed the power that kind of sits underneath fandom that we tend to not notice. And it went from professional obligation to sort of personal mission. We became evangelists, we became advocates, because effectively what the data tells us is that fans are happier. They feel a greater sense of belonging and connection to the world. And I think if we take a step back and look at the society we have now, we all would want those things. We want more happiness. We want more connection. We want more fulfillment. We want more engagement with society. And we have at our fingertips a tool that we can leverage to get to those things. Now, it doesn't solve everything for us, but it does help push us in the right direction. And I think that that's the important thing. So are we shills for the sports industry? Maybe. I mean, I don't know that I can necessarily solve that, but
we're not shills here. It's because we're saying, I mean, the story we put together here, or the narrative for the sports fan, you will understand it. Some of it might be surprising, but it's something no one's was talking about before. Like, they're talking about aspects of this. This is, you know, it's our book, so it's new. It's got to be new. We came up with or discovered this all, but it's not something that was kind of in the ether there. It does, as we are advocating for you as a fan, you should lead into it. It's good for you, good for others, good for society. Is going to be good for the sports business, but that's not our objective here. We initially started off as a sports business book as we were kind of, you know, coming across some of these findings, but then we thought there was a bigger story to tell and a more inspiring story to tell for sports fans. If you're invited to a fantasy league, you know, there's going to be drafts happening over the course. I have one tonight, over the next week and a half. Do it. Because it's good for you. It's good. You're going to be interacting with 11 other people. And yeah, it's going to be a pain on Sundays when somebody kicks a field goal and you lose. You had a big lead and everything. But it's not about that. What it's about is then texting your friends and saying, "Oh, you beat me this week. I'll get you next time." And all those like seamless minimal interactions are actually quite good for you and quite positive. And in our society, we need more of those. We need more opportunities to say, hey, hi, you see that game? And then after that, it's like, oh, how are you doing? How's work going, or whatever? But it's really the game is the intro to all those other conversations, which lead to those benefits Ben's talking about.
Yeah, Dave, I'm glad you said that, because that's what grabbed me about this idea, right? You said we need more of that. And I would agree with you, even more so in a post-pandemic world as we're reintegrating into society. I mean, we continue to get further and further from each other as humans and as relationships. And you use the line, which every person really has probably used at some point, right? How about that game last night? How about them Cowboys? You know, how about the Tiger Woods? How about whatever? It's in the ethos. It's in the societal culture. It's a norm that's easy. It's safe. It's approachable. It's fun, but it's an opener. Is the safety of it part of the thing that allows it to be this social lubricant?
Absolutely. The versatility of sports, I think, is critical here. Sports can be the foundation of your relationship with your father, and also the thing that you just head nod to the stranger on the street and have an interaction quickly with. It's that ability to kind of fit these different circumstances and anchor these different interactions that makes sports so powerful. That and the fact that it exists at scale, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing specifically unique about sports other than I can walk in. If you plop me into a bar, any city in the country right now, the chances of me being able to gin up a conversation with a perfect stranger using sports is much higher than using some sort of other cultural trope.
Game of Thrones.
Like, yeah.
Right.
Pearl Jam.
House of the Dragons comes out. I it's not a guarantee that I sit in a bar, whether it's in San Francisco or, Sioux City, and can, gin up a conversation about Game of Thrones. Pretty safe bet if I bring up the NFL, I'll be able to have a meaningful interaction with someone.
That's a really good point. I was wondering that. What is it about sports specifically? And is it the ubiquitous nature of it's everywhere? And on a percentage basis, more than half of people are interested in some sport. Is that really what it boils down to, you think?
Yeah, it starts with the scale. So you know you're going to have that interaction. But even you get into some niche here, it is safe, as you said. It's always live. There's always something new. There will be something new every single week, something else to talk about. Game of Thrones, it's locked. You could talk about the show and which season was the best or which shows or whatever, the characters, but it's always going to be new. There's a new conversation to be had. And, the other, it doesn't matter. You could have an absolutely wrong take about it, and it doesn't matter, because what you're actually doing is just interacting with the other person. But it has all these, it's easy to kind of get in. You could strike up the conversation, even if you're not a fan. And, you're a Cowboys fan, you can ask, well, how are the Cowboys going to be this year? And I'm not a Cowboys fan, so we just use as a universal example. But every Cowboys fan is going to be happy to talk about why they are. I'm a Yankees fan, so I can go in, we could use the rest of this time to talk about the Yankees, but because we're, as sports fans, we're happy to talk about those things. So, and it's easy to talk about, and there's no, you could also have, the beauty of them is you could have, I could call somebody out, like a Cowboys fan. We do focus groups regularly, and the opening gambit is like, well, introduce yourself, where you're from, what you do, and what teams you're a fan of. Invariably, there's always one Cowboys fan in there, and what happens? The other six look at that person and just sneer, just pure derision, and the Cowboys fan is happy about it. And there's like nothing else in life that you could actually do, like mock a complete stranger, and the person will just sit there and like, yeah, all right.
I want to dig into the depth of the book, but first let's rewind out a little bit, and we've got Dave and Ben. Introduce yourselves. Tell us, what you do, how you got here, and how you got to writing this book. Just a brief intro about yourselves.
I'm the SVP of strategy analytics at Fox Sports. I've been here for about 6 years. My day job, like I said, is to understand fandom, and that's really what my job description is all about. And I spent the previous, 10 years of my career as a consultant, doing brand strategy and consumer insights work, and spent a lot of time in media and also working on sports brands, which is where actually I met Dave.
Yeah, so I started in the digital ad agency world, then moved over to NBC, worked in their news division, which is when Ben and I met. We hired a brand strategy firm, Sterling, that Ben came over, and we had, you know, we obviously developed a good working relationship then. And then I went over to work at Madison Square Garden, and Ben was a consultant we used there. And then subsequently, Ben went over to Fox Sports, and I subsequently went and started my own consulting company, Dexterity Consulting. And I consult for Ben now and a few other clients in the sports space and outside the sports space.
And we spent a lot of time talking to sports fans, and even going back to Dave's days at MSG, we worked on the Knicks and the Rangers. And so we had some insights kind of about fandom floating around kind of in the ether, and especially after the first couple of years that I was at Fox. And eventually we decided it would be a good idea to try and test some of them. And so that's where the book came from, is we arrived at a point where we had an intuition based on years of experience that to be a fan is to be a part of a community. And that is a line that works really well in a meeting. It's I think every fan kind of nods along at that idea because it feels intuitively true. And we thought, well, how can we prove this? How can we prove this at scale? And so we spent the better part of, 18 months trying to figure out how to prove it, trying to figure out how we could get some data behind that idea. And ultimately we landed on the hypothesis, well, if to be a fan is to be a part of a community, if that's true, then fans are going to have more friends. And so we set out to test the hypothesis, do fans have more friends? And in fact, hence the book, and the title of the book is Fans Have More Friends. Fans do, in fact, have more friends.
This episode is brought to you by Rocket Money. I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now, I use Rocket Money, and it does all of that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all of my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with a few taps. I love how the dashboard shows me this month's spending compared to last month's, so I can clearly see my spending habits. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/smart. That's rocketmoney.com/smart. One last time, rocketmoney.com/smart.
Rationale for everybody out there who's about to go watch a game or who's getting prepped for their fantasy league as I am. So let's start here. I know that some of the research shows that just on a scale, it seems somewhat like a miniature magic pill, right? As it relates to health, confidence, optimism. What was it about the fandom versus the non-fan specifically that you found created the biggest divide as it relates to mindset?
I think the biggest thing is it's really about fandom as a social lubricant, right? It greases the wheels of social interaction. And so that's where we get to this idea that fans have more friends. So not only do they have more friends, but they value those friendships more. They interact with those people more frequently. Same is true for familial relationships. So people that are engaged fans have better relationships with their family on a statistical basis. And so it's not that sports fans versus non-fans have these mindset differences. It's that they have more robust social lives, right? That's where the magic is. It's not the sports aren't the magic pill. The sports are the gateway to human interaction. Human interaction is the thing that creates all of the ancillary wellness benefits that fall out of fandom. So that's where we see increased levels of happiness. That's where we see increased levels of gratitude and satisfaction. That's where we see increased levels of confidence. These are all a result, not necessarily of sports directly, but of the human connection that arises because of sports.
How much of it is we feel like we're on the same team?
we played with that. And I certainly was dealing with that while working at the Knicks and Rangers for that time. And it does, you have that connection. You meet the person at the airport, you talk Commanders, talk about your frustrations, your sorrows, and, you know, your hopes for the future. And you have a meaningful discussion and, you know, you could probably talk hours there. That's a great thing. In terms of banding or whatever, it's less so with that, because what we saw as we on our kind of the way we divide fans up in our data set, we have a way we score our respondents based off of their fan interactions. So what sports they follow, what activities they do. And one thing that we saw was that fans of the bigger the fan, as we were meeting fans in the real world, they weren't just football fans. They were also baseball fans, and they followed golf, and they were interested in, you had more layers to your fandom, to not just being a Commanders fan. And what we saw that was actually the more powerful bit, because in the fall, you play a Commanders fan. In the winter, you play a Capitals fan. And now you're actually spreading your circles out. And so now if you think of this from a social perspective, you have your fall friends that you have your fantasy league around. In the winter, you might watch the hockey with your dad, and then baseball comes, and that's with your dad and your grandfather and your friends from work. And then the cycle gets repeated over and over. And that was that's actually the stronger force that is creating this dynamic that we see. There's other ways where fandom just being kind of part of that and identifying with it is important to your psyche, and it adds something to it. So I don't want to say it's not meaningful, but the bigger thing is the constant compounding, those constant compounding interactions.
I think the other thing I would add to that is there's a desire, because of the sort of combative nature of sports, right? Sort of the head-to-head, it's our team versus the other team. There's this tendency to put that in the framework of it's us versus them. And when we think about the world of fans, and we go back to that, you know, the situation that you just described, you could be connecting with the other Commanders fan over the Commanders and the quarterback situation, or what's going to happen with the head coach or the offensive line. But you could just as easily have a meaningful interaction with a rival Cowboy fan or a Seattle Seahawks fan, right? And I think we want to put it into these us versus them, this us versus them dynamic, but really it's about we, right? It's this sort of common thing that we can all connect with. And in those individual interactions, I might be, you know, connecting over different elements of the game, but the game's the thing that's bringing me together with these other people and creating the room for this conversation that would otherwise not happen.
No, yeah. As a Yankees fan, I teach my kids. I have a 6 and 8 year old, and I teach them that, you know, these Red Sox fans are, you know, not good, and we have a running joke in our household on it. But in all my kind of meeting people just out in the world, if I, as a Yankee fan, I meet a Red Sox fan, our conversation is fantastic. Like because they are knowledgeable baseball fans. They watch us very closely, obsess over the Yankees, so that we have a good back and forth, and it actually. The us versus them disappears, and it's just, we're just baseball fans and that are just sharing our passion.
That kind of leads me to a question I had, you know, in our world today where there is an increased emphasis, as there should be, on connecting across lines, whether that be social lines, racial lines, wealth gaps, all that stuff. Does sports play a role in that? Is it a critical arena in this kind of willingness to step outside of those like us?
Absolutely. I mean, I can set the table, Dave, and then hand it over. I think the progression that we went on in kind of digging into what's in the book is this idea of fans have more friends. And then we started to notice all of these wellness benefits that people enjoy because they have this more active social life. Where it got really interesting is when we started to look at levels of trust that people have in both other people and institutions, and sort of how people that are aligned with certain political parties view the other side of the equation. And so I think this is really the journey we went on, where it's pretty easy to get your head around the first couple steps in this journey, where you go from fans have more friends, they enjoy these benefits. But when we start to get into how this can actually dampen the effects of polarization in our society, that's where the light bulb went on for us. And we thought we were onto something that was really, really interesting.
This is where I think if we took it up, the fans have more friends and they're happier and more confident. We don't get a book. Like there's some nice stories and we share some nice stories of different fans we met along the way to kind of bring some of the points to life. But really where we're adding new thought here and why, you know, going back to the earlier conversation, why sports is important in the scale, because it actually, we are a divided country and we have two sides that feel the other side is evil. And there's not much in our lives that we actually interact with each other outside of sports. And so there are a few points that were all happening in the same time as we were kind of researching still for the book during COVID. And one was around COVID. In April of 2020, we put out a survey just to see how fans were feeling about everything that was going on. And you were inundated with all sorts of polling data on how Republicans and Democrats were taking the pandemic differently in terms of wearing masks and social distancing. So we asked the same questions that was available in public polling, but we want to put it through our kind of our fan filter, so to speak. And what we found was, you know, initially interesting, the bigger the fan you were, the more likely you were to adhere to wearing a mask and practice social distancing. But then when we separated it out between Republicans and Democrats, we saw the different levels that Democrats were rating those things higher. That was, you know, widely available in public polling data. But what we saw was, as a Republican, the bigger fan you were, the more likely you were to adhere to these things. And, you know, similar, that trend was already high for Democrats and progressed as well. So then, you know, a few months later, the social justice protests erupt, and we begin measuring attitudes towards the kind of protest movement and other race-based questions that we borrowed from public polling. And what we saw was Democrats at a higher baseline than Republicans, but within both groups, the bigger fan you are, the more positive your views were to the social justice movement or to the country becoming majority minority in 20 years or whatever the question we were asking. This trend line held. And so, and Brent brought up institutions or trust. And so we measured trust in institutions. And the institutions we were measuring, you know, so the bigger the fan you are, the more trusting you are of our institutions, whether it's police, military, religious leaders, or professors, scientists, or in the news media. But what we saw within those groups, because those are polarized institutions, Republicans align more with police, military, religious leaders, and Democrats with the others. When we looked at the Republican-aligned institutions, we saw Democrats having a more favorable view, the bigger the fan they were. And then consequently for the Democratic-aligned institutions, even the news media, the bigger the fan the Republican was, the more positive their views were. They were still low as a baseline, but the movement was what was interesting. The movement is what compelled us to dig further.
I had a friend of mine who said, I have to stop playing fantasy football because of the negative implications it has on my weekend and my happiness. You know what I mean? I mean, there are times when I feel like I'm more upset than the players who actually lost the game. What is it about this identification that is so important, and how does it kind of play into what you write about?
In short, the reason we engage so deeply in sports is because many of the relationships we have around us are predicated, galvanized by that sport. So the way that we think about this is it's a bit of a flywheel, the way that fandom works. And so what happens is you engage in fan activities. You play fantasy football. You might lay some bets on some sports. You'll watch some games. You'll buy some merchandise. You'll go to some games. You'll do all of those things, right? And the more you engage, the more positive feedback you get from your social networks around you. Now, it could be intimate relations. It could be your family. It could be your friends, close friends. It could also just be like the barista at the coffee shop in the morning is wearing a Dodgers hat and you strike up a conversation that way. But you're constantly getting this positive feedback of social interaction. And that's really the thing that drives us and propels us further and deeper into our fan passion. And then we get to a point where it's just so ingrained in our identity that we really feel those emotions, right? We feel it just like we're part of the team. In fact, you know, the joke is like, are you a we type of person, right? Is it when you talk about your team, is it a we or is it the team? And of course, you know, I'm not on the Denver Broncos. I grew up in Colorado. But when I talk about the Denver Broncos, it's always a we. You know, we're going to be good this year because it's so ingrained in who I am as a person. But it's only ingrained in who I am as a person because so many of my relationships are predicated upon the Denver Broncos, right? When I call, I have three brothers and my father. When we get on the phone, the first thing we talk about is the Denver Broncos, right? The reason that we'll text on Sunday is the Denver Broncos. Now, someone could look at that and say, maybe that's not a very healthy relationship, which maybe that's true. But without the Denver Broncos, we're certainly not having those interactions. And right. So when you think about the teams we follow, the sports that we follow in these terms, they become a centerpiece of the social networks that we have. And we're inherently social people. And I think that that's the thing that we have to remember here is that we're sort of driven to connect. And this is just a very, very easy means of connection that we can all kind of take advantage of.
And it's fun. And it's drama. Fun. Right. And the other thing, even the... You mentioned your friend, and I had this feeling also when I stopped playing fantasy football years ago, but now, you know, living the our actual book, I have to do it. I'm compelled to do it, you get to experience a variety of emotions around this, that there's negative emotions and there's positive emotions. You can be introspective. You can be hopeful there. And these things are, you share with other people. There's not many things you can do in life where you get this range of emotions, which is just overall beneficial to your kind of social well-being and your interactions with other people. And, you know, Ben's example of like, that's all they're talking about. You know, maybe that's not healthy. It's like, but they are talking about other things. Like they are like what do you think about the Broncos this year is code for how are you doing? What's going on? You know, how are the kids? All those things, which those questions do follow, but that's just an easier in there.
Right. Yeah. And Ben, I want to get back to something you said about how you said, you know, first conversation I have with my dad, my brothers, is going to be about the Broncos. And you said, you might say that's not a healthy relationship, et cetera. My guess is you definitely would not say that based on the book. So leaving aside the ease at which it allows us to connect, for somebody that says, well, what about more meaningful things or real things or important things? What would you say to them?
I'm practical. I'm more of a realist. Are there things that matter more in the world that we could be spending our time engaging around? Sure. But the reality is like there's a lot of friction created by those topics or those interests, or they're so niche that I can't actually share that in a meaningful way with a lot of people around me. And again, it comes back to this idea of scale. Sports I can share with a lot of people around me. And so as a result of that, we can generate a lot more social interaction because of sports. So I think one of the things that we want to do is kind of change the narrative around sports and fandom and move on from this stereotype of like the trivialized bro-ish face painter and really focus the attention on all of the meaningful human interaction that's happening around sports. You know, for every face painter who's boorish in the stands, if you just flip the camera, you know, later in the section or further down the row in the section, you're going to see father-daughter interactions. You're going to see brothers interacting. You're going to see high school friends interacting. You're going to see a lot of really positive stuff happening because of sports. And yet the oxygen is kind of sucked up by this idea that it's a bunch of trivial, you know, bros kind of drinking beer and backstabbing each other.
What was the most surprising thing you learned as you went through this?
For me, I think Dave and I might share this, it was really the noticeable uptick in trust among sports fans. That's the thing that I think really signaled to us that we were onto something that was more profound than maybe we would have thought. The idea that I'm more engaged in the community around me because of sports, that felt like we were kind of pushing the edges of the impact that fandom could have. But when we got into this idea, we see the data, we see it very clear in the data that fans trust people around them and trust institutions more. It really made us understand that sports are changing how people see the world around them. And that's something that's really, really, really powerful. And there's not a lot of tools that we have, again, that operate at scale that can really change the population in ways that sports can.
Yeah, I would agree. It's the, you know, Ben, as we were in the early days dreaming of the book, which we didn't know what it was and didn't know what we were going to write about. But we were doing work and it was quite interesting. And we were spending a lot of time with sports fans. We had stories to tell. Where I think we found our purpose, our mission or whatever, was when we were digging into that, you know, once COVID hit and we were, you know, testing some of these fault lines in our culture and getting to see how sports fandom can even penetrate into there. That again was surprising and also just, you know, added that, you know, our refrain is it's good for you, good for others, good for society. But that good for society piece was something you can't say for many other things.
Do people give you pushback when you say good for society when we're talking about sports? I mean, an episode we just recently released was about status, and we're talking about the things people value. And one of them is moral status, right? So that could be religion, but it could also be health and wellness, just the moral status. Do you get people who say, oh, come on, this, to your point, Ben, it doesn't really matter. And you're ultimately saying, the sport itself might not matter, but look at the way it impacts people.
Yes, that, I think that's the most important thing. One, we get a lot of pushback. We get a lot of naysayers kind of that want to push those lines. The reality is, like, one thing we haven't talked that much about is we have a very robust data set. This isn't just some polling that we've done, you know, once or twice. You know, we spent a few years amassing a trove of data that's 60,000 people big. And the consistency with which we see the numbers fall out the way that they do is amazing. And so we're talking about double digit increases in happiness, belonging, gratitude, satisfaction. You really, if you look at the numbers, there's no way that you could say that this isn't a big deal. It's not, we're not talking about a few points here or there. We're talking about dramatically changing a person's well-being. And we're advocates for that. We're advocates for more well-being. I think that there's, it's hard to find somebody who's on the other side of that argument.
Yeah, it's almost as if you could say, in this case, we're equating or we're aligning sports to a lot of things like meditation or something, right? It's what is the result we get from it? Let's remove for a moment to look at it apples to apples. Let's remove the thing, especially considering the thing in and of itself is helpful for a lot of reasons, team building, exercise, you know, kids playing sports, etc. You mentioned the data set. How do you define a fan?
It's really tricky. We've developed a fairly simple process, but the industry standard that we kind of came from was we would just ask people, are you a big fan or not? And someone would say, yeah, I'm an avid fan. And someone would say, no, I'm a casual fan. And that was, we had sort of like two pretty crude buckets that we would put people in. And the reality is we didn't get very good results because we weren't being very precise in how we measured fandom. And so what we wanted to do was develop a system that took your passion into account. So we asked people, are you a big fan? And they say yes or no, and it's self-reported. But we also wanted to connect that passion to action. And that's really where you, like, the proof's in the pudding. If you feel emotionally compelled, if you feel passionate about a sport or a team, you're going to then do some things that require money and time as a result of that passion. And if you don't do those things, then you're not really a fan. You're just paying lip service to the idea. And so what we've done is we've developed a scale that allows us to measure people on their fandom based on what they're doing, as well as how they feel about the sports in question.
Yeah, and so basically the non-fan group is basically doing nothing in terms of our battery. You know, so one cutoff point is just in terms of your TV viewing, in terms of viewing different genres of TV. If you're not watching sports, it would be hard to say you're a fan. Now, you might follow here or there, and we allow for, because in many of our surveys, we're not throwing anyone out, so to speak. We're allowing non-fans in there, and then we kind of grade them across this scale from a non-fan to a, you know, what we call a high-value fan in the book.
Where do you all fall on the fan spectrum?
We're both high-value fans. We're both fairly engaged, I think. Yeah. And even more so now, like, you know, there was a time where I can kind of relate. You were talking about your buddy a few minutes ago who had to opt out of a few fantasy leagues, you know, stop with some of the pick 'em pools or whatever that might be. It was just demanding too much time or sort of attention. And I can relate to that idea. And then you see the data, right? And you see your phone light up with texts on a Sunday from a group of college buddies or high school buddies or whoever that might be, and you realize what's actually going on, and you realize how good it is for you to have those, again, trivial interactions, and how good it is for them that you're replying to the text thread as well. And that's when, you know, if I was ever waning and losing the faith, I've recovered that with this book.
Yeah, at this point, we know too much to, because I was also waning a bit, and, you know, work, and, you know, I just had kids, and I was probably down on that. But now my boys are old enough, and we live Yankees and live and breathe Yankees in our household, that they're into it. And, you know, the most connected time in our home now is 7 o'clock when the Yankees start.
Yeah,
we're all together.
Network,
the families.
Huh?
Yeah, they love Michael Kay. And it's because even like I had a feeling, you know, the Yankees have been playing well this last month, and it's just been frustrating top, you know, it's an established pattern over years that this is what happens with this team. And, you know, I'm coming home, I was like, I don't even want to bother. But then I, you know, took the philosophy of the book. It's like, no, my kids are there. Like it's not about them and them not hitting or whatever. It's about us watching together and them peppering me with questions about baseball. And that's what's making the positive. That's what's making us happy. That's what's making us feel connected. There's other things that we could do that as a family, but as my wife, who is not a fan, has kind of seen this happen now, that we've tried other things. Nothing has worked like sports has.
And Chris, if I may just jump in here, because you've talked about your kids. I have a couple of kids as well. You know, I think one of the things that I think about, take sports aside for a second. You know, one of the things that I really hope for my kids as they grow up is that they are able to find deep, meaningful friendships. Like, I think it's a really important part of leading a fulfilling life. And, you know, one of the things you're doing, so you're indoctrinating your kids into the, went to the Nats game. Dave's doing the same with the Yankees. I just had a daughter recently, and the first thing that she got from my dad, her grandfather, was like the Broncos onesie. One of the things that we're doing, it's not just kind of bringing them into this tribe of fans. We're actually giving them the tools that they need and can use to go create connection out in the world. And I think it's really important if you change your perspective as a parent on what fandom can be and what it can do, I think it's a gift that you definitely want to give to your kids.
That's an interesting perspective, actually. And I'll tell you where it aligns with me. I just took I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. I just took my 7-year-old ice skating. And it's the first time he'd been on ice in, I don't know, 4 years. We were having a blast, and I saw some other older kids around, and they didn't really know how to skate. And I was with a friend and his son. And I said, you know why I want my son to learn how to skate? And he said, why? I said, because at 16, I want him to be able to come and skate proficiently and like go with his friends. Like the more things he can do, the more opportunities for connection. I don't care. That could be play a trumpet. That could be sewing. I genuinely don't care. Right. But the more exposure, and this is kind of the equivalent, but it's not the physical element. It's the mental or emotional connection, allowing for you to be part of the tribe of more people, which gives you more social connection, social ability.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it just in activity terms, you're absolutely right. You're basically by handing off these activities to your kids, you're giving them ways that they can go connect with people in the world, and ways, you know, hobbies they can engage in with other people. Those hobbies can galvanize relationships in much the same way that sports can. Sports is just another thing. Kind of another healthy habit to develop that helps you generate more friendships and connect and more sort of connection, which then leads to all these positive things, both in their lives currently, you know, as children and teens, which is some data that we're digging into now, but also later in life as they move out of that time where they're really playing and really watching.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, because we all stop playing at some point.
Do we? Do we have to?
Well, yeah, it's a...
At least playing basketball.
Basketball, come on. I'll tell you, that sport doesn't get enough credit on how dangerous it is. Basketball is the first one I gave up, honestly. Then it was flag football. Then it was hockey. And now what's left is softball and golf. So,
and the beauty of basketball, like I've you know, told my, you know, we joke in our house of like they love playing baseball. They haven't gotten into playing basketball yet. And in terms of like a social sport, there's nothing better of walking to a park and complete strangers. Okay, let's go play 2-on-2, 1-on-1, whatever it is. And you can do it anywhere with relative ease.
Well, Dave and Ben, I appreciate it. I think it's a really unique take. I think the human element behind it in talking about connection. I mean, a long, long time ago, we interviewed Brené Brown, and she was one of the first to really highlight to me the importance of human connection, and then doing it through the guise of sports, which, you know, sometimes gets a bad rap. Oh, you're just sitting around. I mean, my first son was born on Masters Sunday. So my connection is I remember watching the Masters on about a 12-inch TV in the hospital while my wife's in labor going like, you all right? Okay, we're good. And then getting back to it. So point is, it connects us a lot across a lot of things. And I appreciate it. Your book that I have pulled up here is called Fans Have More Friends. It's coming out right when we air this. And I just wanted to turn it over to you and say, where would you like to guide our listeners? Are there more places you're writing or more places they can learn about this?
You can follow us on our website, fanshavemorefriends.com. We can sign up for our newsletter. And we will be publishing a lot of this data on Twitter as well.
This week's guests were Ben Valenta and David Sickerjack. It was hosted, as always, by Chris Stemp and produced by yours truly, John Rojas. Ben and David's book, Fans Have More Friends, will be available on November 15th, wherever books are sold. All right, let's jump into the quick housekeeping items. If you'd ever like to reach out to the show, you can email us at smartpeoplepodcast@gmail.com or message us on Twitter at smartpeoplepod. And if you want to stay up to date with all things Smart People Podcast, head over to the website and sign up for the newsletter. All right, that's it for us this week. Make sure you stay tuned because we've got a lot of great interviews coming up. And we'll see you all next episode.